Hey everybody, real quick, just a couple of updates. One is that I mentioned this in a previous episode, but my WorldCon fundraiser has, through an external donation from my uncle, which is awesome of him, basically made it so I can get the ticket without needing like $16 bazillion. This sort of offsets the new cost, which is the hotel cost, which sucks, but at least, of course, that's sort of offsetting that. So as of this moment, I only need $994 for WorldCon. I extended the deadline because all of these costs are just like so I can eat and not starve to death and have some sort of a roof thing to put over myself. So I haven't really done anything new to that otherwise. So there's perks. Do go check those out. But if you've got a little bit of money, you got like $5 or something you can spare, that would be awesome. So I know there are a bunch of listeners. I know you guys support the show. I really want to be there for the Hugo ceremonies. Julia will be there. There's now talk of Paul Wimmer being there. Jen may be able to make it. We're thinking that's going to happen. There's also now talk that David Annandale will show up, and Mike Underwood too. So, and Stina as well. I mean, basically the whole crew may be coming. Or at least half of the crew. So, in any case, on that, I'm going to shut up and I'm going to let you guys get to the show. This is our Hugo episode. We recorded it right after the Hugo Awards were announced. So, enjoy.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, Ed. Monsters, John. Monsters from the Id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
Exterminate!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T minus 5, 4, 3... 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show, episode 201.
2014 Hugo Award nominations, the good, the bad, and the awesome.
I'm Sean.
I'm Paul.
We have two special guests for this episode. We have Natalie Lurs. Hello.
Hello.
And Justin Landon, who has been here before to kvetch about the Hugos. So welcome back, Justin.
What is going on? Let's do it. Ring the bell. Ding, ding.
Awesome. Okay. So we're going to start with general reactions because I figure we got lots to say. So I'm going to actually throw it to you first, Justin, because you came online angry. So we should just get it out. Bring it, Justin.
Well, you know, there's anger and then there's multiple kinds of anger. And, you know, in years past, I have demonstrated some anger about the Hugo Awards and what I viewed as a disconnect between modern fandom and fandom of the past, right? And that's certainly been indicative down ballot. You know, the novel is a separate thing, but down ballot, it's been this disconnect between fandoms of the past and fandoms of today. And I am pleased to report that today's Hugo nominations have brought the down ballot Hugo into a new modern fandom, which is fantastic. We have seen our fan writer, our fanzine, our best related work, our fan cast, and a lot of these other down ballot categories is finally a recognition of a lot of the modern notions of fandom and great thoughts from the next generation, which is awesome. So I'm super stoked. We can get into that more later. The best novel ballot continues to be an issue. And this year we've got what appears to be a strange voting block that has emerged. And I hesitate to call it manipulation. We'll hear Natalie's perspective in a moment. But it is a strange voting block. And we have some people on the ballot that have no business being anywhere near a best anything ballot. And I would argue it's just not the obvious suspects. Our best novel list of the five things that are nominated, only one of them has any business being there. And that's a real shame, and it's getting worse and worse every single year.
Wow, so very strong words from you, Justin. So why don't we jump to you, Natalie, since Justin already sort of said you will have very specific things. We can maybe get into more specifics, but sort of a general reaction for now. Why don't you jump in?
Well, generally speaking, I am really super excited about, again, the down ballot stuff, you know, the fan writer fanzine. Even the short story category for the most part is really fantastic. But yeah, there is a strange voting block happening. And I know Justin said he didn't want to call it manipulation, but I'm going to come right out and say they manipulated this sucker.
Okay, so you really think it was blatant manipulation?
I think when two people with a lot of readership and a lot of people who like to slap each other on the back come put together a ballot and a significant amount of the people on that ballot, on that nominating ballot, make the final ballot. I mean, I think there's something going on there.
Hmm. Okay.
And I'll jump in real quick and just say that obviously we're talking about Vox Day and Larry Correa. And
yeah, I didn't want to get BD again.
Obviously we're talking about them. And the two, if you look at their ballots, which are identical that they posted on their websites, about everything north of north on the ballot, you know, novel being the top of the ballot. So everything north of short story, everything they recommended essentially got on the ballot, with the exception of one, Sarah Hoyt's novel in novel. But otherwise, they had a very high success rate. The Torgerson novella and novelette, the Dan Wells novella, and Larry Correa's novel all made the ballot. And down ballot they had some too, elitist book reviews in fanzine. And so it's interesting. No other ballot clearly that was put out there had as high a success rate as theirs did.
Yeah, and we'll talk, I think, a little bit more specifically about that, because we'll have, I suspect, a lot to say about each of some of the categories that you guys have already mentioned. So I'm going to jump to you, Paul. Paul the Unbanned, which is an important thing to note for this podcast, since a certain name has already been mentioned.
Yes, I unfortunately do have a history with Sarah Hoyt. So if she actually had wound up on the ballot, this could be a really uncomfortable conversation. I'm no fan of Vox Day or Larry Correa. I don't think they know I exist. Sarah knows who I am, but I don't think they know. The novel category is kind of a head scratcher. Two of my nominees are on there. The other three, I'm not sure why they're there. There's some good stuff in the shorter categories. There's really good stuff, as you guys have said, when it goes down ballot.
Yeah. Okay.
There's clearly been 1,923 ballot nominating ballots, which is awfully high. So makes me wonder, just a little.
Well, I'll kind of pair it just really quick what some have already suggested. I think overall for certain categories, like fan writer category, and most of the fan categories, except for the art ones, because I don't have any say in the art. I mean, I have no idea. But for the most part, like the fan categories, the sort of southern end of the ballot, overwhelmingly very excited, to be honest. Media ones, the Campbells, which Natalie just put in the little chat box, also something I was really actually pleased about. I saw a couple people that I nominated get on there, which was really exciting because I thought they deserved to be there. And then, of course, the further up you get, the more strange it becomes, because there's like really excellent choices, and then it's like, wait, what? Why? Why is that there? There's some just odd selections. And I suspect we'll have a conversation later about how the no award option is probably going to be used by a lot of people this year. Why don't we jump into specifics? Do you guys want to start with maybe the southern end of the ballot, which is happier?
Sure.
Okay. Let's start with the happy stuff. Well, let's start right off the bat with the Campbell. The nominees for the Campbell, which is repeatedly told to us is not a Hugo, even though it's a fucking Hugo, is Wesley Chu, Max Glasgow, Ramiz Nam, Sophia Samatar, and Benjamin Noon. Shridwang Cave? I don't know how to say the last name, and I really apologize. If somebody could correct us, that would be really great, because I feel dumb for not knowing.
I do think she often goes by B, so...
Okay, well, B. I would just say that really quick...
Oh, yeah,
that,
Bisha on Twitter, yeah.
I believe three of those names were people I nominated.
Of those names are people I nominated.
Yeah, Max Gladstone, who, honestly, if you've ever interviewed Max Gladstone, he is the funnest character. Just a lot of fun to interview. Sophia Samatar and B or Benjamin Noon. So I was really excited to see those names. And in fact, I'm really excited about the other options, Ramez Nam and Wesley Chu. I'm really pleased about that. Obviously, there's a jazz hand up. I'll let you jump in, Nelly, just a sec. There's a really big contingent of Angry Robot writers here, which is really nice to see. Two of them are Angry Robot folks. I don't think Max is. I think he's just Tor. But in any case, I see Natalie wants to jump in, so why don't you jump in, Natalie?
Well, aren't we going to talk about the Retro Hugo?
Oh! I didn't even think we were going to talk about that.
Oh! Owned! Yes!
Wait, does people care about that?
Well, I voted
in it. Ayn Rand! She got a nomination!
I'm just glad that Ray Bradbury's up for fan writer. What the hell is that?
That is kind of cool. Well, yeah. Well, okay, so let's jump back really quick. So Natalie, what would you want to say specifically? You just want to talk about Ayn Rand?
It was just Ayn Rand. I just wanted to make a joke.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, then do you want to say something about the Campbells?
I'm really excited at the diversity that we're seeing in the Campbell Award.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of really great writers, so that's going to be a hard one to vote for.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm not sure what I'm going to pick because, oh, God, there's so many good names.
Even with the second year of eligibility thing, there's three writers who I nominated in the second year. Do I pick Max? Do I pick Ramiz? Do I pick Sophia? I don't know!
Yeah, it's really, 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 really tough. We should mention that I believe Natalie just put this down there, that apparently Max's first book is on sale on Amazon.
Three Parts Dead, yeah.
Yep, Three Parts Dead. I think it's like $1.99 or something.
Kindle? $1.99 or $2.99, something like that.
Which
it's
is a steal.
Well worth it. Yeah, it's well worth it.
Considering its normal ebook price is probably like $10.
Yeah, how much the other two are.
So
it's an excellent novel. I'll say for me on this category, I'm pretty happy with it. I am not a big fan of all of the writers that are on here. I don't like all of their work, but I am happy that they're there. I think it's a good group of people to be represented on the list. Certainly better than we've had in years past. I am super stoked to notice that the one who is primarily a short fiction writer is not a unprolific short fiction writer. She is very prolific. One of the things that frustrates me in years past has been we've had short fiction writers nominated for the Campbell who only have one short story credit, which to me just seems a little silly when you stack them up against people like Max now, who will have three novels out by the time he's eligible or by the time we vote for this or award it. So I'm excited to see that the short fiction writer has a great number of credits.
Yeah, I'll just kind of bounce off that. I do think it's kind of, I don't know how you judge whether somebody is a best new writer who only has one workout. Because I mean, there is an aspect of writing where, I mean, there are plenty of great novelists who wrote one book and it's really hard to judge them based on a body of work if they don't have a body of work. And in that case, it's where, you know, if you only have one short story, how are we supposed to assess how good a writer you are? Maybe you just got lucky this once and you wrote like one really good short story, but that's it. Or maybe you don't, or maybe it's not it, but, you know, it is a weird sort of, it seems like in some ways the category is sort of a weird category because of course it, if you, let's say you release one short story each year, you can only be nominated for 2 years for each. And then after that it's done, but that still doesn't mean that you're somehow not a new writer anymore. So it's sort of that year limit, I think, in some cases is maybe somewhat harmful. It almost seems like a year limit plus an additional, like in the event that the year doesn't qualify, like a work limit, like, you know, five short stories or two novels or something. But that maybe is just sort of I don't think it's a big issue, but it's a little thing. But anyway.
When it clearly hamstrung, we'll look up ballot in a minute that Anne Leckie is nominated for Best Novel. It's her first novel, but because she had some sort of short fiction credits going all the way back to 2007, she's not eligible for the Campbell. So it's always interesting. Yeah. I think this is Max Gladstone's, and it's a two horse race between Gladstone and Samatar, and we'll see how it shakes out.
Yeah, that's really gonna be tough.
And they both tap the fans, yeah.
That seems super tough. I don't know how I'm gonna choose those.
Well, luckily you can just pick one number one, one number two, and
hope for the best.
hope for the best, yeah.
Well, all right. Anyway, any last thoughts on the Campbell? Should we move up the list of – moving up the list, I mean, to fan writer, because we're just going to skip fan artists, I think.
the only person I know who was a fan artist has been nominated in a pro category this year, so I unfortunately don't know these people.
I nominated Sarah Webb, so...
Well, I'll point out that Sarah Webb, I'm not mistaken, was published in Writers of the Future. She sold, like, some of her art was in Writers of the Future this year, which is a professional sale. So I find, you know, the whole fan artist thing is fascinating. It, Randall Monroe was nominated in this last year, and, like, I'm pretty sure he makes a full-time living on XKCD. So, again, like, I don't really know what a fan artist is. But anyway.
Well, you're not supposed to make a living off of art. I thought that was kind of the point.
Well, I mean, living versus income, like, who knows? Who knows what the difference is?
Well, okay, but I mean, like, there's a difference between, like, a, you know, a amateur writer who, like, maybe sold one story in, you know, a token market, and somebody who has three novels out with Tor. And so it seems like that would be a similar, I mean, granted, this is somewhat, when it comes to income, that's always, like, a messy territory for determining whether somebody's a professional or not. I find income always kind of difficult, and that goes to some of the other categories, like semi-pro-zine about how they decide these things. Some of that stuff just seems silly to me, but in any case. But unless anyone has any thoughts, shall we just jump to Fanwriter then?
Do it.
All right. Fanwriter, Liz Burke, Cameron Hurley, Foz Meadows, Abigail Nussbaum, and Marcus Shiro. Okay, Justin wants to talk first, so I'm just going to shut up and say, Justin, go.
Well, this is a fascinating category. In years past, this has been a category dominated by traditional fanzine writers with one or two what I would consider sort of either a professional writer who was moonlighting in the fan writer category, and very rarely what I would, you know, what you would call a blogger or something like that. And this year we have five pure bloggers, and one of whom is a professional author, although, again, you know, has a day job and all that kind of stuff, so writing is hardly her primary source of income. So it's a fascinating category. I'm super stoked to see that we have this, although I'm having a weird reaction to it insofar as we've got four writers in particular, the four ladies, who come from what I would consider a very similar community online. And it's interesting that in their diversity, I mean, it's great to have them there, but there's a lot of similar voices in the category. So I'm stoked they're all there. I'd be fascinated to see how the voting breaks down, but I do wonder moving forward how that will how that'll shake out, because really Shiro is kind of the one that stands out. So we'll see.
All right. Well, Natalie has been saying lots of things in the comments, so go for it.
Did you just call them all ladies, Justin?
Was that wrong?
They're women.
Oh,
unless you're going to call Mark a gentleman.
Okay,
ladies.
That's a fair point. I mean,
I've never thought of that as a term I should not use. But thank you for pointing it out. If it is a term I should not use,
I mean, a lot of us will call each other, you know, oh, you're lady writer, you lady editor. But we're kind of doing it as sort of a jokey thing. I would never call them that group of individuals ladies as a collective. I would call them, you know, women. Just, I don't know. That's just me.
Fair point.
I guess I'll just jump to Paul, because he also had his hand, unless you wanted to say something else, Natalie.
I'm just really, really super amazingly excited about this category. I'm just so happy for Liz and Cameron and Foz and Abigail and Mark. It's just an amazing, amazing category. I mean, just the slate is wonderful. I'm just so happy for my friends.
Well, Paul, why don't you jump in?
Okay. I noticed right away, yep, four women, four very similar, as Justin said, very similar sorts of writers writing in allied spaces, if not in the same space. And right, there's no sign of moonlighters here or traditional fanzine writers. These are five people who are very active on the internet and very talkative and very much parts of our community. And I'm glad to see this list. I nominated Liz and Cameron, and I should have nominated Foz, and I didn't. I had other people to nominate. I'm glad to see some of my preferences being reflected here, and the changing preferences of the field being reflected here. It's part of the awesome and the good, the bad, and the awesome.
I actually nominated all four of them. I nominated all four of the women, and so I'm actually sort of poking myself when I ask, when I make this point, but it demonstrates that there was absolutely a voting bloc, I think, that wanted to see these kinds of writers appear on this ballot. And as we move forward and we talk about voting blocks, which we're going to be doing as we move forward, I just think we need to be aware that there are other voting blocks at play here. And in this case, I think it was a voting block that we all very much like and agree with. And there are going to be voting blocks later that we don't. So
yeah, voting block that we agree with is still a voting block.
Yeah, not intentionally. It's not like we all colluded by any means. But there was definitely a group, a community here that wanted to see these kinds of writers reflected on this ballot. And I think it would be short-sighted of us not to recognize that fact.
Yeah, I will just jump in and say that I can't remember how many of these names were actually on my final like five that I selected, but all but Mark, just because I'm not familiar with Mark Asher. I know he's been on the list before, but I just wasn't familiar with his work. But the others were all people who I had on my long list, who I had to, some of them I'd have to make kind of hard choices to sort of cut out for other names, which annoys me because I kind of wish it could just be like fan writer, it could be like 10,000 names on that. It'd be great. Just so I could not feel sad that I have to cut people from my list. But overall, just really, really super pleased by this list. I mean, just to see Foz Meadows there just brings me so much pleasure. I love Foz Meadows. I mean, I don't agree with Foz on everything, but just the essays are just great. They're great fun to read, at least for me. And Abigail's Nussbaum's, I mean, even when like she just does like quick little sort of quick points about movies, they're always just really fascinating takes on the films. So and all of the names are just, with exception of Mark, because I'm not familiar with Mark, are just great selections. And I see Natalie has a hand, but I should just note that Jen Zink feels very bad that we did not tell her we were doing this right now. So apparently she's going to be getting online to like randomly jump in. So just thought you all should know. So Natalie, go.
Yes, Justin brought up the point, you know, that there is a voting block that we all agree with. And I think that's an incredibly valid point. But the issue is here, we all didn't sit together and say, okay, who are you going to put on your ballot?
Yeah.
Log rolling, yeah.
We didn't collude. Nobody posted a ballot and said, you know, if you want to be part of our group, this is the ballot you will submit.
Right, right. I mean,
or the ballot we're going to suggest you submit.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that goes to something that last year there was a lot of talk about the Hugos in terms of people posting their ballots not posting their ballots, but posting, you know, where they'll say like, oh, you should vote for us because we can eligible for a Hugo. And there was some talk about it this year. Last year it was more, I think it was Justin McCallum, whose last name I can never say.
McCallum.
There you go.
Jonathan McCallum.
Yeah, Jonathan McCallum. What did I say?
Justin.
I'm just whatever. Anyway, I'm terrible. Jonathan McCallum, and noted that, you know, there's something sort of iffy about just like saying nominate me instead of mentioning other people that are sort of also good choices. And this year was something that I actually tried to do. If I mentioned that we're eligible, I also said like here are a bunch of other stuff. And so I get on Skiffy and Fanny, I actually did a whole post of just everyone who is eligible for Hugo that has ever been on the show, and mostly their eligible work. So it just became this like monstrous post of books and podcasts and all kinds of like fan writery people and all kinds of stuff. Because I feel like that is a much more useful thing than to sit there and say, you should nominate me or you should nominate just my friends. It's much more useful to say, here's all the cool stuff that I think is just awesome. And you can just kind of pick like what you like, go check it out and see what you like, rather than sort of, what I guess we're going to talk about probably more explicitly when we get to the fiction category, is the sort of idea of creating voting blocks that we sort of collude together to go to the ballot with. It's just something that I think is going to be a question that's going to come up much later too, not just from this. I suspect there's going to be angry blog posts from Justin, and Natalie, you'll probably write something else considering what has happened in your comment section already within like 25 seconds of you posting that post. As some people like to say, as you like to note, case of the VD. which I'm just going to leave it like that because I think it's a hilarious phrase. All right, so should we jump to what is obviously my category?
Yeah, our category.
Sorry,
yeah,
our category.
I don't think either one of you are allowed to talk on this category.
What? No, I'm not allowed to talk conflict in this category. I voted conflict, in this category.
Conflict of interest since we're nominees. So, actually, that is a fair point. So, since Justin and Natalie aren't nominated, why don't you two you talk about this category? Sean and I will be quiet for a moment.
Do you listen to podcasts, Natalie?
Not really, actually. I like to listen to them sometimes when I'm driving long distances, but they have to be at least an hour long for me to bother with them, because otherwise I feel like I'm going to drive my car off the side of the road. And on the I-95 corridor where I live, that is a bad thing. So I don't tend to not listen to podcasts, which sucks because I want to, but I can't listen to them when I'm at work. So
I listen to 5 of the 7 regularly. Uh-oh. So I feel actually somewhat qualified to speak on this subject. And it's a pretty good list. There are a few that I would swap out. I think Brad Bollier and Greg Wilson's Speculate SF is one of the best podcasts out there, and it's a shame it didn't make the list this year. I don't care for The Writer and the Critic. It's just not really my speed. I don't know Verity. Tea and Jeopardy's great fun. It's this cool fictionalized sort of interview show where Emma Newman creates these great scenarios. Galactic Suburbia is awesome, has a very specific point of view, much like the Cood Street podcast. I think one of the things that frustrates me with both Cood Street and Galactic Suburbia is they both have a very distinct point of view, and they don't often bring in a lot of other perspectives. And so it ends up being a little repetitive at times. And so that's why, Skiffy and Fanti actually, honestly, is probably the one I will vote for to win this category. I think it's the most diverse of all the shows. I think it has the most interesting perspectives. SF Signal frustrates me quite a bit often because I don't feel like their guests are often as prepared as they could be. And so, for that reason, Skiffy and Fanti will get my vote, but T and Jeopardy will probably get number 2. And then I'll flip a coin for Galactic Suburbia and Cood Street.
Can I say something?
Yes.
I've been banned, apparently. I'm not allowed to talk in this category because I'm nominated in it.
It's conflict of interest, Sean.
I can't say how excited I am that other people that aren't me are in this too.
That's about as general as it gets. We are the competition.
I'm not saying who you should vote for because
it's obvious if you're listening to this, you should be voting for us. Well, it is a good list.
It is a great list. Yeah. Go ahead.
There's some diversity here. There's 3 Australian podcasts, which is interesting.
Yeah, and that was what I was going to say, is The Writer and the Critic actually is on the list, which I was really pleased about because I started listening to them after, I forget who was telling me, it was maybe Jonathan McCollum was mentioning the show, and I started listening to it and really started loving that show, so I'm really happy to see that they are on the nomination list. Because, I mean, obviously, like Cood Street, I really like Cood Street and Galactic Suburbia. I now am a new listener of that show. I just started listening to SF Signal again, too. And even TN Jeopardy I've had some blast with. So, like, it's just a really cool list of shows, not just because I'm on it, but because there are great shows that I enjoy. So that's what I will say. But I'm not going to say whether or not anyone deserves to be there or anything other than – well, no, I will say. They all just deserve it. How about that? Totally useless comment from me. All right.
And I would just point out that as the host of a podcast myself, Tor.com's Rocket Talk, shameless plug, my show will never be eligible in this category.
It's because it's part of a professional website?
And it's paid. So
It will be a
best-related work.
Yeah, best-related work about be your best shot at it.
Yeah.
Okay. And look at that. Jen is here. Hello, Jen.
I magically teleported into the podcast.
Okay, that's just creepy. Anyway, so let's move on to the next category. Should we go to Best Fanzine?
Best Fanzine.
Best Fanzine or Zang, whatever. General reactions on it. Does anyone have anything specific, actually, that they'd like to sort of talk about here? I suspect Natalie does.
Well, I think the Best Fanzine category has actually got a number of really great nominees on there, and at least one where I'm just like, huh. What is that doing there? But I am super I mean, Book Smugglers, I mean, it is a fantastic site. A Dribble of Ink and Porno Kitsch are all great. I am not familiar with Journey Planet. I'm going to have to go look it up. But then there's Elitist Book Reviews. And I'm just like, what? But maybe that's just me. Maybe it's a great site. I think I looked at it once.
Well, maybe me too, from last year. Well, Justin, you wanted to jump in, so why don't you jump in?
Yeah, I was doing this thing where, like, I start talking to the microphone. You know, like that, you know that move you make when you, like, want to fight somebody? You kind of do, like, the head, shoulder lean? I just did that because I got a little worked up. So, yes, as Natalie said, the fact that The Book Smugglers, A Dribble of Ink, and Porno Kitsch are all on the ballot is phenomenal. These are three of the finest blogs on the internet. The Book Smugglers are super prolific and are awesome in advocacy and criticism. A Dribble of Ink is probably the closest thing to a traditional magazine that we have on in fandom right now. I mean, he publishes articles from all kinds of people, which is awesome. I wish he wrote more himself, because he's a very talented writer in his own right. But and then Porno Kitsch, you know, Ann Perry and Jared Sherin are probably the two best writers in our field. I feel like sometimes I think they have so many interesting things to say, and the way they say them, they're hilarious and smart and insightful, which is awesome. I'm so happy they're there. Elitist Book Reviews, look, they were here last year. They were here last year, probably again because Larry Correa recommended them on his blog. They're back again this year. I had the pleasure of meeting Stephen Diamond at WorldCon last year. He's actually a delightful guy. We had a really nice conversation. I like him and consider him a friend. Their site is different than the others. It's only reviews. They don't do really any commentary. Their reviews are definitely more conservative leaning than most of the reviews out there. And I am going to have to hold them accountable. They did not like The Raven Boys by Maggie Stiefvater, and for that reason, they should be shocked into submission.
Oh, goodness.
Journey Planet is a fanzine, and I will be very interested to see a traditional fanzine. I'll be very interested to see how the voting breaks down on this, because you've got four pure blogs here and one traditional fanzine. And if the way the voting blocks work within the Hugos, every year prior to this, it's been four fanzines and one blog, and the blog has won it in a walk. Well, with four blogs, how are those votes going to split? And does this have a chance for that fanzine to come back and win this year when you've got all the blog votes being split among four blogs? Well, it'll be really interesting to see how that shakes out.
Okay, so Paul, you had a hand. Go for it.
I did. It's an interesting set. And after SF Signal won for the second time last year and pulled out, I wondered what the heck was going to happen this year without the 800-pound gorilla that everybody can vote for and win. And what we got is the rise of the blogs. We do have one fanzine left, but otherwise blogs have bubbled to the surface. We have two British/Canadian blogs. We have actually Book Smugglers is technically one too. So it's a British focus for the most part, which reflects the fact that it's in Hong Kong this year. And my gut feeling, Justin, to answer your question, is that the same people who like A Dribble Ink probably like Porno Kitsch. Aren't adverse to the Book Smugglers. I think Elitist Book Reviews and Journey Planet have very different voting blocks, and I think they're probably more limited. So I think it's a three-way race between Anna, Aiden, and Anne and Jared to see what comes out on top. And I have no idea how that's going to come out. It's a toss-up, I think.
So I have a question, actually, because you know, a couple years ago when they first started thinking about whether or not we should allow blogs to be on here, and then leading on to last year when there were a couple blogs on there, I can't remember exactly how many. And then this year where it's basically almost all blogs, there's like one traditional fanzine here, Journey Planet, and then everything else is just blogs. I wonder if there's a sense that the voting, the general body of voters now is becoming increasingly less sort of attached to the older forms, and that they're because it seems to me that that's what's going on here, is what we're seeing is people are sort of discarding this old method, because quite honestly, fanzines, the traditional fanzine, to me is kind of silly, at least in the structure in which they continue to operate, which is they're like on a really antiquated website, and you still have to like download the weird PDF, and you have to, you know, it doesn't make sense that something that is basically a magazine but is just written by fans and released for free is still operating on principles that even in the internet age are 10, 15, maybe 20 years out of date. Maybe with the exception of the PDF. I don't know when the PDF was invented, but the idea that you could like transmit this information on the internet, like it feels like that's shifting, because the blog makes much more sense as a device for sending this kind of information. But Natalie, you want to jump in on that?
I just wanted to say, in terms of traditional fanzine, the last time I got an actual paper fanzine in my hand, it was 1992.
Yeah, I mean, they don't...
So, I mean, yeah. And I'm going to be 40 this year, so I would have been 20 years old, 18 years old that year. So it's just doesn't seem like it's a format that really a lot of people, especially in my age group and younger, are really engaging with anymore.
Yeah, and I would say that most of the... Even Journey Planet releases online, but like I was saying, they're using what are antiquated methods for producing that. Like they don't have an easy mechanism for delivering the content to readers. You have to kind of, at least as far as I know, you have to go to the website and like download it on your own. And those websites are sort of difficult to find. There's no conversation that's being had. Whereas like, you know, if you go to Twitter, people are talking about, you know, a dribble of ink, or they're talking about a Pornokish blog, or they're talking about a Bookslinger blog, or SF Signal last year. They're talking about an SF Signal blog on Twitter or on Facebook or wherever. I never see the traditional Zions get talked about. It's very rarely do I ever see them get discussed, and that tells me that there's a disconnect between that community who did used to read these things in paper, as you were noting in 1992 is the last time you read one in paper, and I don't know, it just seems like there's a massive disconnect. I see Jen has a hand first, so Jen, why don't you jump in?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you have two things going on here. A, the fact that the zine as we knew it is obviously being supplanted by the blog. But I don't think that's necessarily something that happened in the last year. Maybe the awareness of that happening is more recent. But the fact that it took SF Signal bowing out to put that many blogs into the category, I think is probably more the shift that occurred.
What the hell was that?
That's me ready to jump in, but respecting the hand process. So if Paul would like to
never respect that,
Paul,
I will see my time from the moment to Justin. Go for it, Justin.
The gentleman from Minnesota yields his time. Thank you.
Yes.
So I don't know about that, Jen. Maybe that's what's going on. I think what has happened is the online community, led by a group of bloggers, and I won't name who I think those people are, but I have a pretty good idea who they are, who have come into the Hugo process and said, damn it, this doesn't represent us. And we have created our own voting pool. We have gone out and evangelized within the online community and said, gee, don't you wish that this award that is so significant, that means something to more people than any other award in the United States, certainly, and perhaps worldwide, shouldn't it represent our sensibility, a more modern sensibility, a younger sensibility, or a sensibility of emerging fandom? And I think we've created this voting pool, and I think this is a year of critical mass. I think we have reached a point at which this online community that we've created within Twitter and Facebook and in blogs is finally saying, we're here. We are the majority of fandom now. We are, and this is reflective of that.
But what do you think it is about the past year that has created that space in which we've sort of taken more power?
I think it's time. I just think that if you look at every year, we've seen slight inroads made. You know, I mean, the first year that we really did this a lot, which was maybe about 3 or 4 years ago, you kind of saw, yeah, that's a great point. Natalie just typed into chat that SIFWA blew up, which is a big part of it as well. And it's encouraged activism within the community, I think. I think there was a lot of apathy in the Hugo process before, and there's just not as much apathy anymore. People give a shit. And So I think it's just time. It's just been a critical mass. There's been enough kerfuffles, you know, the ReaderCon fiasco, the sexual harassment stuff, the mansplaining that's been going on the internet forever. I mean, all these things, I think, are creating this impetus.
Well, and I think a lot of it has to do with, I remember several years back when people were talking about whether blogs should be nominated in this category at all, there was sort of a lot of blowback against it. The idea was, no, they cannot be there because they're not really fanzines, and if they let them be there, what's going to happen is they're going to take over because they're just super popular. That was sort of the implication, at least, in what was being said. And I think some of that is what you, Justin, you're suggesting, is that this is just – this community has changed it, that we're perhaps some of what you're suggesting about, like, you know, Syphilis exploding, but also in terms of where we get our information about the fan community and our engagement in fandom is changing. And the majority of us are no longer doing it via these classical fanzines. And I don't know if that's a reflection on necessarily on the quality of the fanzines, although in some cases maybe so, but more reflection on of how our community now engages with other people within it, which is, of course, by the internet. We're doing it by the frickin' internet. And in some senses, this category is just growing up and catching up to the 21st fucking century. I mean, it's astonishing to me that A Dribble of Ink has not been on here before. It wasn't on here last year, was it? No.
No.
No. Okay.
And it wasn't even in the long list.
Prior to this year, the only blog that had ever been nominated was SF Signal.
Yeah, I mean, It astonishes me because, I mean, places like A Dribble of Ink have been writing for years and have been doing work that, quite honestly, I mean, I go to A Dribble of Ink before I go to, you know, Journey Planet. And that's just largely because I didn't even know Journey Planet existed until I saw it on a Hugo ballot. Because that there is still this critical disconnect, and I don't know why it is so hard for these two sides of fandom to talk. Because they're not talking to each other at all. No, Dribble of Ink's fans are not talking to the Journey Planet fans. There's no exchange, it seems.
I think it's changing a little bit slowly over time. I mean, if you look, you know, I'm on the LunCon programming staff this year. I'm helping out on the literary program track. And James Bacon, the editor of Journey Planet, is somebody I've been emailing a lot with. He's heavily involved in the volunteer staff at WorldCon. And you know what? I think these divides are starting to merge a little bit. We'll see as we go through the rulemaking process with the World Science Fiction Society this year, whether there's a blowback on this, whether we're going to see a separation of the fanzine and the blog, whether we'll see a new category for blog, or whether there's just going to be a recognition that the fanzine is on its way out. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I think slowly these communities will come together, I hope. I have hope.
I hope so too. But Paul, you had a hand. Why don't you jump in?
I did. What you guys were just saying was something I was going to talk about when I was yielding the time. There's a lockstep disconnect between fanzines and blogs. I'm taking the Carl Schrader novel as my thesis here. Fanzines in the traditional sense, be it PDF or paper, are slow moving objects that. There is discussion within them, but it's slow and very patient, and it's not at the speed of the blog. And that's why I think there's such a disconnect between conversations between blogs, which you go on Twitter and talk about immediately, and fanzines, where that conversation is over months and even years. And trying to reconcile those two timescales is a challenge. And I suspect that the ultimate answer is that the fanzine, as we know it, is going to go away. Even if they split it out and just have a best blogs and best fanzines, I think fanzines are going to become more and more of a niche interest. I mean, kind of like a regular correspondence through the mail is a niche, more and more niche interest.
Okay. I mean, all of that I think is good. So, who the hell's dog is barking?
Natalie.
Sorry, that's mine.
Gosh, not my, no, Natalie's got other problems. Sorry, Natalie.
I'm just going to apologize right now for all, like, my typing and my pen moving, because...
You're a rookie.
I'm a podcast noob.
anyways, well, why don't we jump forward? I suspect nobody really has much to say about Best Semi-Prozine, Professional Artist.
I have a little bit to say about Semi-Prozine, just really quick.
Okay, go for it, real quick.
Five great choices. It's They're all wonderful magazines. Strange Horizons, I think, is going to be the one to win it this year. They have such a huge UK base, and they are the primary UK magazine here. I strongly suspect that they will win this category, and that's a good thing, I think. So, anyway, I just wanted to put in a plug for Strange Horizons.
Excellent. Okay, so shall we jump ahead a bit? So to skip professional artists, because I don't have anything to say. Does anyone else have anything to say?
I'm happy to see a couple of people on this list. I consider friends and allies. Galen, who won Best Fan Artist last year, has moved up to professional artist. I'm very glad to see that. And I think Julie Dillon's work is excellent, as is John Picasso's.
I would just like to jump in here and say I wrote a piece for the book Smugglers at the end of last year that examined gender parity and cover art throughout science fiction and fantasy, looking at several measures and some anecdotal evidence and some art directors that I talked to. And the general message was there's very few women that are actively getting gigs designing and doing covers in science fiction and fantasy. I mean, it's a much lower percentage. And in my process of this, I realized that in the history of the Hugo Award, there have only been three women nominated ever. And that was Julie Dillon, Kinoko Kraft, and one other whose name I forget, because it was way back in the 70s. And so the fact that we have three women on the ballot this year is fantastic. It's an absolute step in the right direction. There are so many brilliant female artists working in the genres right now. And I wouldn't even put the three that made the list at the top of that list. So there's some real talent out there. And, you know, on the other side, the three that are on there, Dos Santos, Harris, and Picasso, are all old hats. They've been on this ballot a ton of times. John Harris is kind of the grand master of science fiction art. And, you know, if one of the guys is going to win it, it's probably going to be Harris. But I think this is going to be Julie Dillon's year.
Okay. I would just say that, yeah, the gender thing also applies to the comic world. There was just a thing the other day, maybe on Bleeding Cool, I can't remember, about women who actually work within the comic industry and realizing how difficult it is just to hire a woman who does comics, because you're sort of receiving sort of weird looks from, you know, the higher ups, who of course are usually men in the comic industry, or there's just so few of them. And in some cases, even though they understand that it's sort of wrong, it's kind of easier just to hire men because there's just so freaking many of them. And I suspect that also and applies to sort of cover art and those kinds of things, that there have traditionally been a lot of dudes doing it. And maybe that's changing. And I hope so, because I would like to see more really cool lists of artist names. So, Jen? Jen, if you muted your mic, you have to unmute the mic. Jen.
I think Jen's dead.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to jump forward while Jen figures out her mic issues. So why don't we just jump ahead? Does anyone? I suspect somebody has something to say about the editor long form.
This is Natalie. I guess this isn't, since Ginger Buchanan just retired, this would be her last year of eligibility in this category.
Oh. That's a fair point. Yeah.
Where does she edit?
She was at Ace for like 30 years. I mean, absolutely influential in shaping this genre.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, she's really the person behind, you know, even going back as far as, I mean, you can just go back and look at all the stuff that Ace did in the 70s, and that's got her fingerprints on it. And certainly the 80s, and you know, the whole Ace Rock line, you know, the notion of the long serials where you've got like the Jim Butcher stuff, and that's, you know, her fingerprints are all over that stuff. I mean, she's been hugely influential. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Tony Weisskopf obviously is the editor at Bane. Was also on the ballot last year, was also again on that recommended list, like Elitist Book Reviews of Larry Correa. So, that's, you know, an interesting, inclusion. Lee Harris from Angry Robot. Angry Robot has done a lot of cool stuff, so it's kind of neat to see a recognition of all the cool things they've been trying to do. So it's a pretty good list, I guess.
Yeah. And I suspect that Tony Weisskopf is not actually that unusual because, as you said, showed up before. So
Yeah, Bain's not a minor publisher. We may have issues with some of its books, but they're not a minor publisher. So yeah, so she deserves to be here.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, absolutely.
Generally, it's a good list. I mean, I don't have any problems with it generally. So I'm like to see. I'm glad that Lee Harris is there because I've been nominating Lee Harris since I've been voting, which isn't very long. So I love Lee Harris. I also, by the way, been nominating Interzone and Andy Cox for forever now too. So.
I do think it's interesting that Liz Gorinsky shows up on the ballot time and again. She's been on here a few times. You know, it's like, how do you – Tor has such a huge list, and they have so many editors, and they all edit a lot of great writers. And it's just interesting that she's the one that shows up over and over again. I don't really know why. I mean, Patrick Nielsen Hayden's been on here a lot as well, but she has been on here at least a couple years in a row. So I just think it's interesting. I don't really know why that is, but she's been here consistently.
I mean, last year she edited Lost Everything. The only reason I nominated her last year because that was one of my favorite books from last year, Lost Everything by Brian Francis Slattery. So she edits books that I like. But again, it goes back to the conversation about how do you even vote in this category. I have no freaking clue. I just vote for people who are involved in books that I like because that's the only measure I have for determining who should be nominated.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not like you see a before and after.
Exactly. I mean, why would I? I mean, as a consumer, I mean, the category really doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, it should be – I think it may have been you, Justin, or maybe it was Jared Schurin who said that it should be, best curator instead. Or maybe it wasn't either of those – either of you. It was somebody else. Best curator instead of best editor, but –
I've said that a few times. I've also said it could – you know, you could easily do best publisher, which would be your, you know, best best editorial direction, you know, where you would give it to the head of the editorial department at a given house. You know, I don't know. There's a lot of ways you could structure it. Best editor is it's awful tricky. It ends up turning into sort of like a career recognition award and less about the year that you just had, which is okay, but we just need to recognize that's what it is.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably one of the least controversial categories, even though it's sort of messy. But anyway, anyone have any thoughts on best editor short form?
I am super happy to see Neil Clark on that list. He, I think, is a fantastic editor.
He won it last year, did he not?
No, Clark's World won it last year.
Oh, Clark's World did.
God. Yeah.
And they're not eligible in semi-prozine anymore because they make too much money now.
Whatever. That's just silliness.
That rule, I'm confused by semi-prozine rule, but that's a different panel.
What's fascinating about this, though, is that Clark – John Joseph Adams, Jonathan Strahan, you know, frankly, three of the people we would consider, you know, some of the best short fiction editors currently in the field. And none of them have ever won this award, despite being nominated multiple times. So it's just interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't have anything else to say on that note. So should we just skip forward?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. We'll just go to Best Dramatic Presentation or the Doctor Who Award, as it's sometimes known. I have lots of thoughts, and most of the thoughts are I will not be voting for anything from Doctor Who this year because, quite honestly, last year's Doctor Who was the worst year of Doctor Who I've ever seen, and if it does not improve significantly this year, I will no longer be a Doctor Who fan because, quite honestly, I hated almost every episode of last year. It was just crap, just lazy writing. Clara is – I don't know what they were thinking with her character, but she's not a character. She's some sort of like walking creature thing. The only cool – I think maybe the best part of the whole thing was the last episode with John Hurt. Of course, John Hurt's not in it enough to be awesome, so unfortunate. And maybe that really short episode with what's his name? One of the other doctors, Paul McCann. That really short mini episode, which would – I thought was good, but otherwise I'll be voting for Game of Thrones. So because, well, maybe Orphan Black, but I'd have to see that particular episode. I'm behind on Orphan Black, so that's all my thoughts. I'm just tired of Doctor Who on this damn ballot. So, Natalie,
I'm completely sitting this category out. I haven't seen any of this.
Me too.
Yes.
Probably for the best.
Me, yeah. 5, 3, 4.
I gave up on Doctor Who quite a while ago. I'm just so tired of it.
I'm actually looking forward to Orphan Black, and I'm excited that it actually got nominated, that it's getting enough play. I haven't watched the episodes yet, but the reviews are pretty astounding, and the concept is. So,
crossing my fingers.
Yeah, I've heard fantastic things about it too, so it's in my list of things to watch someday.
Exactly.
Excellent. Paul?
Yes. Here I'm going to be a voice of dissent here. Yes, I mean the Doctor Who episodes, I'm not going to vote for the two straight Doctor Who episodes. The five-ish Doctors reboot was cute, but I'm not sure that's best. I haven't seen Orphan Black yet either, and Game of Thrones is Game of Thrones. Actually, my favorite out of this list, and I'm glad it's on the ballot, is An Adventure in Space and Time. It's a wonderful homage to the homage and story about the making and creation of Doctor Who 50 years ago, and I am very glad, and it's getting my number one out of this list. Absolutely. Yes, it's Doctor Who related, but it's not a Doctor Who episode. And if you want to recapture a little bit of the magic of Doctor Who, I recommend to all our listeners and to you to watch it. It's wonderful.
Okay. Well, maybe I may have to do that. All right. Well, I think we've hit that pretty well. Any thoughts on best dramatic presentation long form? I would just say, I am very depressed that Man of Steel, which is quite obviously the greatest cinematic achievement in history,
do not go
is not
back.
There.
No.
He did. He went there.
Not here, not now.
It is. It's simply genius. Genius on the level of Citizen Kane.
No, no. Just stop talking. Stop.
My gut is it's a Frozen versus Gravity.
Oh, God, please not Frozen. No,
I think there's a voting block that, and we talked about blocks here.
Are 12-year-old girls and don't know good writing?
say what you will about the writing, the themes and the, message is such a bad word. The aspirations of Frozen, I think, are going to carry it at least into second place, if not beat Gravity. I think Gravity should win this category, but that's just my opinion. Pacific Rim is fun.
No,
Iron Man
no,
3
Pacific
is...
Pacific Rim!
It's fun, but Pacific Rim has its own problems.
But!
Natalie?
Yes. But Sharknado was robbed!
Oh, God.
Totally! Yay!
Should be noted that we were not nominated in Best Dramatic Presentation Long Form for our episode on Sharknado.
Well, maybe we'll be on the long list. It'd be funny if we were.
We won't be. But Natalie, you really, really wanted to talk.
Sorry, I just wanted to say that Sharknado was robbed.
Okay. Justin, then.
Well, okay. So I have actually, and this is stunning, seen three of the five movies on this list, which is crazy because I don't watch movies. But Frozen, look, I got to tell you, as a father of a 4.5-year-old daughter, watching a film that the true love doesn't solve the day and you don't need some prince to kiss you is the winner in a Disney princess film, like, is awesome. And like, to me, I think it was it's an important film. I'm glad that it was made. I dig it. And I agree that it's not the best narrative structure ever. Like, it's not a terribly clear film the way it's written, but I will vote for it as number one, and I'll probably put Pacific Rim number two because it was so much fun. I did not see Gravity, so sorry. It's too serious.
Okay. Jen?
Sorry, I literally just watched this a couple weeks ago, and I've got a 13-year-old and a 12-year-old daughters. And they didn't even like it, which is kind of saying something, because up until that point, they were huge Disney fans. And the music was fun, but it's so disjointed that no matter, regardless the aspirations, which granted, I was so impressed and I was so wanting to love this movie. And it was a huge, huge disappointment. And for that, I can't vote for it. I just can't. I'm still crying over it, to be honest. That's how much I hated it.
Okay. Well, I will jump in. And just on the subject of Frozen, like, I think when I went to it, I mostly went because my cousins, who were, I think, maybe the oldest is 10. I can't remember how old. But, you know, at that age when Disney films are very relevant to them. And I went to see it mostly on their recommendation because they just kept citing Olaf quotes and having a blast. If anyone's seen Frozen, they know who Olaf is. And So I went and saw it, and while I recognized what it was attempting to do, and I think if this were, you know, 20 years ago and Disney were attempting to do that, I think it would be hailed as a really, really incredible achievement. I think the problem is it didn't go far enough for me. And I don't know. Maybe it's just it didn't do enough to sort of offer a critique of the princess model. That the lesson had to be learned by her doing what any parent would say is any adult would say is absolutely fucking stupid, which is why would you just sort of give in to like this idea of this like fanciful prince idea? Like, I mean, you live in a world where people are backstabbing each other and that's indicated in it. It seems to me that that should be something like she should just be naturally wary and not so naive. And maybe that was just the thing I didn't like, was that idea was not destroyed enough by the end for me. That's it. I still think it does some cool things. And I am glad that at least it didn't play the whole sort of prince narrative out and make it, as Justin was saying, about just true love solves all problems. At least not true love as we think it. Obviously, if you've seen Frozen at the end, it is true love, just not romantic true love.
So oratorial love.
Yeah, yeah, which I find much better than, you know, you just need a man to kiss you and everything will be better. Whatever, that's just a dumb trope. But Jenna, you have a thought?
So two things. I have to agree with Justin that it coming out, it is a hugely influential film. Disney on its own, as much as we might hate it, is very influential on young people, period, primarily young girls. And to that, I have to give them mad props. Unfortunately, since I know the original premise of the film, it's like extra ruined, because in the original storyline, Elsa's straight up evil. And so all I can really do at this point is give them credit for not going that direction, which would have really pissed me off. And they partially redeem themselves, and yet not really, because they don't explore any of the things that they could have explored and made a big deal of. You know, Elsa dealing with her issues, they just kind of go all over. And I'm shocked with my own disappointment in this film, to be honest. So I got to give it to Pacific Rim Property, probably. Only because Gravity's terrifying.
That's like a total Freudian slip by saying Pacific Rim Property, because that's like really all it is.
Property, big, I know, exactly.
It's like a big merchandising endeavor. Like it's.
God, but the merchandise is so sexy.
And not as big as Frozen's.
I'm sorry, giant robots punching giant sea monsters. How can you not love that?
Yeah. I love it.
Not to mention Pacific Rim, which we haven't really talked about, but it's like the first time we've ever had a disaster film like that that isn't like America, fuck yeah, which I get a kick out of. I thought it was a cool take on the disaster film and sort of the rescuing humanity that wasn't United States centric. It was sort of like the anti-Independence Day, which is cool.
Yeah, a little bit. I hope that when they, I think they're actually going to be doing it, when they do Pacific Rim 2, that they will do more with that particular aspect. But I'll agree totally. That was something I really loved about Pacific Rim. So, which will be sort of going back the other direction, because it's going to be very America-centric for Godzilla, which is taking place on U.S. soil, if I recall correctly. Although, it's got Ken Watanabe in it, and he's amazing! So,
yes, he is.
I hope they give him a samurai sword and he just cuts shit up. That'd be great. But
that Ken just be... versus Godzilla.
That would be great, right? It would just be him against Godzilla, and he would just cut the shit out of Godzilla. That'd be great. 2 hours of like Godzilla getting beat by like a little man with a samurai sword.
Oh, this podcast got nerdy.
Yeah. Went to a weird place.
That's a good place. Iron Man 3, okay film. I like that they at least did something which you wouldn't expect from a superhero film, which is they tried to deal with PTSD. I don't think they did it terribly well, but they at least tried. So I give them props for doing that. Hunger Games: Catching Fire. I liked it till the last 5 minutes, when I wanted to get, you know, pull all my hair out and just throw things at the screen, because the ending makes no fucking sense whatsoever. Gravity. I really like Gravity. It was very pretty. That's basically all I got.
Onward.
Onward we go. Onward. All right. Anyone want to say anything about Best Graphic Story, or should we scooch by?
Saga, Saga, Saga.
Okay.
Saga, Saga.
Saga, Saga, Saga.
That's it? Okay, good. We can move on.
That's it.
Best related work. Since I got banned last time, Justin is banned from this category. You cannot say anything. Because you were nominated in this category and you can't say nothing. So, obviously Speculative Fiction 2012, which Justin Landed edited with Jared Shuren, is nominated. There's also a Cameron Hurley essay here, which is nice, really cool. Writing Excuses Again is on here. Careers Dig Time Lords is on here. And Wonder Book, which is a Jeff Vandermeer book, which I've not read, so I have no comment on that. My vote is going to be going to SpecFic 2012 just because I'm totally biased and I just like it. I'm also, I probably shouldn't comment on this.
Maybe you should have been banned? Yeah.
Because I'm also editing the 2014 edition, so...
Conflict of interest.
Maybe it's a conflict of interest. So, Paul, jump in.
Good. I will talk because I have a dog in this fight. This, as usual, the best related work is a mix of stuff that doesn't fit in every other category. We have two books of essays. We have a blog post. We have a podcast. And we have the wonderful weirdness that is Wonder Book. You've heard the phrase, one of these things is not like the others. It's like, none of these things are like the others, except for Queer Stick, Tide Wards, and Speculative Fiction 2012. Queerstick Time Lords, I was kindly given a review copy early by Sigrid and Michael Damian Thomas, who are friends, so maybe that disqualifies me slightly. I really liked it. I promoted it. But Speculative Fiction 2012, I was not part of that, sadly. But I'm sure Justin and Jared's editorial work is excellent. Cameron's Hurley Priest was powerful. I'm not sure that a single blog post should get best related work. It kind of makes me feel weird. Wonder Book is wonderful. It is weird. It is indescribable. You should have a copy. It just is. It's Vandermeer goodness. And Writing Excuses, I listen to it every week. There you have it.
Writing Excuses is a pretty good show, but it won last year. So, I have other opinions on other things. So Jen,
I just want to say that I'm really disappointed that Janelle Monáe didn't get really nominated in this category.
Did she release an album last year?
Yeah, she did. And it's brilliant. And wonderful. And beautiful.
This would be the only category
she belongs
in. But
I don't think we've ever seen music. Has there ever been music in breast-related work or albums?
In breast-related work?
Breast-related. I might have a small obsession. Stop it! Nobody heard that until you said something.
We all heard it.
Shut up,
Justin.
I don't know. I mean, this would be the only category would fit is because best related work is just a catch-all category. But I need to reread the rules. But I imagine so if Writing Excuses gets on there. So, Paul?
Yeah, I suspect next year we might get a music nominee. There's a Celtic band that does music based on the works of Alex Bledsoe's his Appalachian Fae series, and they just released an album this year, so it would be nominatable next year. And I wouldn't be surprised if it winds up in this category.
Yeah, that'd be very interesting. I don't know. Who knows?
Video games, just saying.
Video games would also technically go in here?
Yeah. Yes, they would. I mean, something like Dragon Age or Mass Effect, something like that would definitely fit here.
Titanfall.
Titanfall. Yeah, maybe.
For next year.
There's a lot of people playing Titanfall right now. Yeah,
that game is badass. I want to play it so bad. The only way I've been able to enjoy it is by watching other people play, which makes me feel very pathetic.
I'll just jump in and say I think video games would also potentially qualify in best dramatic presentation as well, depending on the type of game that it is. Certainly something that has a cohesive narrative would absolutely fit there.
Yeah, yeah. StarCraft 3. StarCraft 2 Edition 3.
And while I have the microphone, I just want to jump in and say, of all of the categories in the Hugo ballot, I'm most excited about this one because it's so diverse. Like, there are lots of different kinds of things in here. There's no clear sort of voting block at play. It's just five very different pieces of science fiction and fantasy goodness. I mean, that it's just a cool category. I have no idea which is the favorite. So I just think it's a cool category. I'm really happy to see everything that's in there.
Excellent. All right. Shall we jump up to the north end of the ballot?
Indeed.
Okie dokie. This is where the shit gets real. Because...
What's that, Justin?
I was just going to say, I haven't heard from Natalie in a while, but I think she's ready to get a little frisky on the short ballot.
I don't know if frisky is the right word.
You're trying to rile her up, aren't you?
Is she there?
Sure. I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I'm actually, my very favorite short story that I read all of last year is on the short story ballot, which is If You Were a Dinosaur, My Love by Rachel Swirsky. So I am just so, I hope that one wins because I'm just, it was the most beautiful, heartbreaking thing I've read in an incredibly long time.
I haven't read that particular one, so I have to read it. I will say that I loved Huvelt. Is that how you say his last name?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Loved Huvelt, and I also loved John Chu's. Both of those were ones that I think I may have moved Huvelt off for something else, but it was in my long list. But I did nominate John Chu's, which I just really loved. And I hadn't read Sophia Samatar, so now I feel like a total ass. Because I really should have read it, and I don't know why I didn't. Overall, I'm really pleased with the short story category. This is the one that, of all the fiction categories, that probably will not piss any of us off, because it's actually a pretty nice list.
There's no controversy here.
Also, yes. It's not three frickin' names like last year. It's at least four. Come on, people. You need to nominate more.
I think the diversity and the atomization of short story markets makes nominations for these categories, especially short story, really tricky. That's why this only thing has four nominees. I bet there's tons of nominees that don't have that 5% requirement.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, there were 865 ballots.
That's huge. Yeah. I mean, so I think they're just being spread out too thinly.
Yeah. And it's again, I think, probably a narrative problem where we're not talking enough about the short stories in the community that is the voting community, maybe. Natalie?
So I've been throwing around this idea of starting a short fiction review site where we would talk more about some of this short fiction because there's so much out there. I can't even get my arms around it.
They used to have one, but I think it went defunct.
Well, there's Tangent, and then there's Lois Tilton's column in Locus. And I know Tor.com does a roundup every so often, but that's it for short fiction coverage.
Yeah. You should do it. I feel like it needs it. Yeah.
I would need help. I would need contributors.
I'm sure you could get a lot of people who'd be willing to review short fiction. Because, like, let's think about it. The short fiction is usually pretty easy to read, and it's quick, so you could review it, and it wouldn't be a stress like a 500 page novel you got to review in 2 weeks, you know.
Yeah, now that my brain's growing back since we're done with the house stuff, so.
Well, that would be a really cool venture. So
yeah, my brain is starting to come back. It was like 4 months of, hi, I'm buying a house. I have no brain.
I have no brain, and I must close.
Pretty much. Oh, look, now I have to clean up my apartment that I lived in for 7 years. Wow, we're filthy people. So.
Yeah, that's always fun to learn.
Yeah, we did that this morning. It was fun.
Okay, well, it seems like we're mostly happy with that. So why don't we go to the categories where I know there's going to be a lot of kvetching, which is the first of them is the best novelette category, which contains an Elliot de Baudard story, Ted Chiang story, a Mary Robinette Coal story, and then Brad Torgerson and Vox Day, also known as VD. So, who wants to go first?
I'm going to go first. Oh, go. So, okay, Natalie, you really want to go
first. For it.
Can I say, what the fuck is going on?
You just did. we really ordered our explicit tag.
I don't understand. I don't understand it. This, like, it makes me sad. It hurts me.
Well, I guess because you've blogged, if I recall correctly, you blogged a little bit about you basically have accused, and I think at the beginning of this episode you also made the accusation, but now it's more explicit what we're talking about, at least, that basically you think that these individuals possibly have manipulated the ballot for their own ends.
Oh, I think they colluded. I think there was collusion. I think they all got together. I think Larry Correa and Vox Day, they both have a large readership on their blogs. Nobody's going to deny that. And they both put up sample ballots and they urged people to go out and vote and nominate.
I will say, I don't know how true that is, and I know you note on your blog post that you're not sure that could ever be proven.
I
recall Larry Correa in the past saying on his blog that he would like to do something like this, largely for political reasons. So I don't know if that's true that he did in this instance, but it is something he has talked about in the past. So it seems odd that so much of those ballots would, of course, their materials would show up here. So Paul had his hand up first, so I'm going to let Paul jump in. Paul, go.
Okay. I can't defend Vox Day's inclusion. I guess I will have to read his story when the packet comes. Just an aside, the Brad Torgerson is in a major magazine. It is an analog story. It's not like some self-published thing that's thrown on the website. So granted the voting for that was probably almost exclusively the same ones that put Vox Day on there, but it is an analog there that is to be taken care of. The other three are stuff I nominated. I like Kowal Chang's and Bedard's work. I really like The Other Half of the Sky as a collection, and that was one of the strongest stories in there. Ted Chang's probably going to win again because, well, he writes few stories and he usually hits home runs. But I also really like The Lady Astronaut of Mars because I'm a fan of Kowal's writing, especially when she breaks away from doing strictly the 19th century Jane Austen with magic and does other stuff as well. I don't think she gets enough credit for her range. I've said this on this podcast before to her. I think she doesn't get enough credit for her range.
Hmm. Justin had his hand up second, so why don't you jump in?
Yeah, I will just say that what I don't know that we'll ever know is whether or not what Vox Day and Larry Correa did is implicitly different than what a lot of people did when they asked their fans to vote for a certain thing. And I don't know. I mean, we just don't know. We just don't know if somebody paid for other people's memberships. We don't know if they just had an email list that went around and said, you should all vote for this. I mean, we know this certainly goes on, you know, in the Worldcon various news, whatever you call them, bulletin boards and whatever, that people have been doing this for years where they say, this is what I'm voting for. What are you voting for? And, you know, we all come to some mutual understanding. And I think that certainly happened to some degree with us. So the question is whether it's organic or whether it's an actual active manipulation. And there's just no way to prove that. I mean, I feel like with the fact that Vox Day is on here makes me think that this is more manipulation than otherwise. If it was just Larry Correa, I might be willing to shrug my shoulders a little bit more because I know Correa has a very large readership of his fiction, where Vox Day does not. So anyway, I'll just say leave it at that.
All right. Natalie wants to jump in.
Yeah, I'm just gonna say, yeah, obviously there's absolutely no way we can prove any of this. I mean, I'm just kind of annoyed and spitballing and hurling my headphones right out of my ears. So, cause I am waving my hands around. You wish you had video of this. obviously there's absolutely no way to prove this. I would love to see how many of the ballots were identical in all respects though. Not necessarily who those ballots belong to, but I would just like to know how many identical ballots there were out there. And right before the cutoff, you know, Larry Correa posted to his blog, you know, exhorting people, you know, don't, and this is a direct quote from his site, don't forget to nominate. The cutoff is coming up fast. It doesn't do any good to spend $40 to combat puppy-related sadness if you don't nominate. And then he puts a little smiley face. And I'm not sure what this puppy-related stuff is. But immediately following that is his suggested ballot. And there's like six things on that ballot, on his nominating ballot, that made the final ballot. So I don't know. I mean, obviously it cannot prove a darn thing, but it doesn't smell good.
I want to say that the puppy related sadness is a reference to Scalzi, but I'm not 100% on that, because Scalzi has a lot of nicknames now from a certain segment of this population. So I'm not 100%. Justin, did you maybe have a response to that specific, or something else?
Not really to that specific, but I will say that I think one of the things we forget is that last year Larry Correa put a ballot out and tried to do the same thing and followed up with a blog post in response. You guys may remember I wrote a very polemic blog post after the nominations last year that cast some aspersions on the Hugo Awards, and Larry Correa actually picked my post up and sort of responded to it. And one of the things he said was, I tried to manipulate the ballot. I mean, he's been open that he has tried to do this. This year, Vox Day got involved as well. And I would guess that Vox Day's dedicated fans are probably even more dedicated to him than Larry's are to him, just because of the nature of Vox Day's hate. So, you know, there's no question that they want to do this. The question is whether or not they actually did it, and who knows?
I don't know for certain that they did. That's the thing. I wouldn't put it past them, though, at least some of them, to do it, just on principle alone. Because just based on some of the things that, I mean, even Correa has written things where, I mean, he's basically has this conspiracy theory, like the liberals and SFF are like out to get him, which is, well, one, it's just kind of silly nonsense. There may be some liberals that like are out to destroy his career, but that's certainly not a consensus. I really don't give a shit, about his career, because that's not any of my business. So, and I know most people who I would consider to be liberals don't care enough to want to destroy his career in any sort of active sense. They may just not read his books, which I think comes down to the, like, for me, there's a reason why I don't nominate some of the names that are on their ballots. And it has nothing to do with the quality of the work. It has to do with the fact that, I'm sorry, but a lot of the people that write these things are assholes. And I can't get past that, because they are like, they're the kind of asshole. Like, I think I wrote on Twitter or something, some of these people are people who I would walk across the street to avoid, because I don't want to know them as people. I don't care if they act nice to you at your face, because of course they can write a blog post or they say some of the most vile, disgusting things ever. That for me is it's a principled stance. Like, I just don't read their work. While some people might say that's a political choice, of course it's a political choice. We make political choices when we buy when we decide what we're going to read and what we're going to buy. They're all political choices to some degree. But there are political choices on my part of just, I just don't want to have anything to do with assholes. I can't stand the rhetoric. It's kind of rhetoric that is uncompromising. When flaws in the logic are pointed out, or when things are pointed out to them that maybe are mean, or that they've hurt somebody or something like that, they do not give two fucking shits. And that for me is a sign of an asshole. That's not the sign of somebody. Like, I've said things that have hurt people. Like, I've said things that have someone has come up to me and said, that really hurt. And I go, fuck, that hurt somebody I know. That's bad. I need to actually stop. I need to think about what the hell I wrote. Like, for example, Liz Burke. If people who know me know that I sometimes make up total bullshit about people's nationalities or whatever. Liz Burke is, I believe she's Irish, if correct. And we were talking about Ireland, and I made some jokes about Ireland. And it became clear to me that they were really offensive. And I didn't realize it as I was writing them. Liz Burke brought it up to me, and I immediately apologized, because I realized I was deeply offending her, and that was something that, A, I have a great deal of respect for Liz Burke, so I don't want to have that be like the end of our relationship. And B, is like, she's right. I was saying things that are grossly offensive to Irish people. And so I apologized. And as far as I know, I've never said anything like that again. Those are the compromises we make in a culture where we want to be civil. You know, we don't say things we know will hurt other people. So, I mean, even like, I don't know who it was said. Somebody said it on Alistair Reynolds' blog post some time ago. I don't remember even who it was, who said that, we shouldn't identify somebody by the pronoun that they want to be identified by. We should just, you know, it doesn't matter if they say they're transgender. I don't care. We're just going to talk by their biological sex. That's it. And that to me is, that is the kind of behavior that for me is just utterly, just, it's just douchebag behavior of the highest order, because you lose nothing to just say, like, if somebody wants to be known by the female pronoun or the male pronoun, or like maybe they just don't, they want something else, whatever. If the only thing you're losing is just calling them by the pronoun that they prefer, That's a reasonable compromise. It's not like they're saying, I want you to cut off your leg and give it to me to hang on to for pleasure. That's not what they're asking. They're asking something very small. And these are the kinds of people that oftentimes, maybe not all of the people that are in the name, that are being named, that don't want to make those compromises, because they don't want to live, if they, even against what they say, they don't want to live in a civil culture. And after all, Vox Dei did say last year that N.K. Jemisin was, didn't he say like a half-breed barbarian or something? I can't remember the exact phrase. Does anyone remember exactly what he said?
Half savage.
So horrible, I wouldn't repeat it.
Yeah. So, I'm sorry. Like, I kind of went on a rant, but that's kind of my take on the behavior, at least. Jen, you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, I want to jump in because I'm going to give a shout out to Renee here, who probably said it better. We'll say it again in other places, I'm sure. The fact that these guys went on a campaign for a purely political reason to get works nominated that had nothing to do with the actual quality of the work is what is especially angering about the situation. And that's what the whole sad puppy thing is about, is, you know, the liberal takeover of the Hugos or whatever it is, which is absurd on its own, but whatever. And I think in the end that's what's going to piss people off. And when they go through the nominating ballot and they start picking what is good and what is not, we'll see what plays out. But I have a feeling it won't be the ones that were nominated due to politics.
Well, Vox Dei certainly is not going to win. I don't see that as shot in hell, because as soon as the people who are, as soon as they learn who Vox Dei is, they're going to put him at the bottom of the ballot.
I would like to point out something here. It's much easier. It's a much lower bar to get on the ballot than to get to actually win the Best Hugo Award. You need like, say what, 50 nominations to get on a ballot. If you consider 1987, the Mission Earth novel that the fans of L. Ron Hubbard nominated for the Hugo Award and got on the ballot and wound up fifth on the list. I think it just got above no award. We need someone like Cheryl Morgan or Kevin Stanley to actually give us the figures. But yeah, if you want to push the politics, you can get on the ballot. Vox Dei and Larry Correa have proved that. I am not so convinced that you can win. It's a much harder thing to win, even if you have this little tsunami of people behind you. So yay, they got on the ballot. Okay, yeah, let's see if you win on the merits, guys. Good luck with that.
Yeah, that's the big question, and what Jen was saying, that the ballots they selected, and I saw them through Natalie's blog, so thank you, Natalie. For posting links so I could see them. The ballots they selected were very obviously, like, we're picking people who are within our circle of buddies. We're not, like, presenting a list of people that we think are necessarily the best in terms of the quality of their work. And while obviously people do nominate people who they consider to be their friends all the time for stuff, not in that percentage where it's just, I'm only nominating my buddies and that's it. You know, there are always going to be, like, some of the people on this ballot are people that are friends, like Strange Horizons, Julia Rios edits at Strange Horizons. So that I can't lie and pretend that my selection of Strange Horizons for my nomination ballot was not in some way influenced by that. Because of course it was. That's not to say that was the only reason, but in this case, the ballots they selected were, like, they were ideological ballots. They were, the people that were selected were people that are ideologically linked with their sort of group, camp, whatever you want to call it. And that's a problem, I think, because if they were just saying, like, hey, let's have a ballot, like, here's the stuff I would love you guys to vote for, and it's like a weird mixed bag of stuff, like maybe stuff we've never heard of, they're just really cool books that they really loved, they thought were great books as books or whatever, I think that would be a different thing than what is clearly more ideologically oriented. And I guess it goes back to what Justin was kind of saying, is there's also obviously a line we have to consider here of, like, at what point is it bad ideological or bad ideology and good ideology as an influencer? Because obviously everybody's ballot to some extent is influenced by their own ideologies, just maybe less so than in this case. Natalie.
I was just going to say, you know, basically they just trolled us all.
Probably.
You know. Yeah, shits and giggles. Let's fuck up the ballot and see what we can do.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't see anything wrong with them posting their ballot and saying, gee, I really want all of my fans to vote for this exact ballot. Lots of people do that. What I have a problem with, and what I think most of us really object to, is the open and overt admission that they're doing it to upset the apple cart. They're doing it to ruin an institution that they don't agree with. And I think that's what I object to. It's not the practice. It's not the self-promotion. It's not, frankly, the gerrymandering of their own ballots. To me, what the problem is that they're doing it out of spite, not out of a desire to elevate the things they love. And functionally, the Hugo Award is about love of the genre, and what they're doing is tearing it down. And that's the problem.
And it goes to something I was saying earlier. This is, they have not even thought about all the people who honestly probably deserve to be on this list in the some of the slots they've taken, or the people they may potentially harm in doing this. Because maybe some of them will win, and they won't win on the merits. They'll win because maybe they get their voter block just to vote for that person and to put no award as the second slot and fuck everybody else over. And that, I think, that is the problem for me, is this, it's this mentality of, I just want to hurt these other people because I disagree with them. I don't understand that mentality. Like, I don't want to destroy their careers. I don't want to say you can't write books anymore and sell them to people who want to buy them. Like, that's not me. I never want to do that. I don't know many people who do. I mean, I'm sure there's some people who would love to see Larry Correa have his career destroyed, but I feel like if he's going to have his career destroyed, he'll do it to himself. He's not going to do it. It's not going to happen because other people. That mentality for me just seems so counterproductive and goes completely against this idea that this is supposed to be about work that we love. You know, even if it's not great work, we just like our personal opinions. It's about what we love. So, yes, Natalie.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I agree so much with what you and Justin are saying. Is like, I nominated things that I love.
Yeah.
Because I want to elevate the things I love to a wider audience. Because being able to slap Hugo Award winning novel on a book can make a difference in the sales. You know, a bookstore is going to maybe stick them on an end cap instead of, you know, right. It helps discoverability in some ways.
Yeah.
Which is not to say that these people don't love what they're nominating. It's just that the actual act of the nomination seemed so much less about that love than about other more nefarious purposes.
So let's talk about this novel.
Well, yeah, let's move on. Well, okay. Actually, we didn't even do novella.
Yeah, I mean, there's a Torgerson on here, but let's actually just, like, if we're going to talk about novella, let's not talk about mean things. I will just say that I have not read the Valente and I've not read the Wells, so I can't comment on those. I will say that I loved Wakulla Springs. It's brilliant. And if you've not read it, I really recommend you read it as soon as you can, because it's just beautiful. It's beautiful work. So
it's very much on the edge of genre, though.
Yeah, it sort of becomes somewhat weird at the very end. But it, for a while, like about 40 pages in, I was like, okay, so what makes this sci-fi or fantasy?
Yeah.
When you get to the end, it suddenly becomes, oh, okay, there's like a weirdness. It's just beautiful.
I'm a fan of the Strauss too, because I love the Launcher universe. That's I will say that.
Oh, so. Okay. I didn't read the Strauss. I missed that one.
Yeah, it's in the Launcher universe. Yeah, it was on Tor.com.
Well, I got some new stuff to read.
I think Kat Valente's fucking amazing. So I haven't read Six Gun Snow White, but I will be reading it. I would say with the short fiction categories, I don't read much short fiction until the ballots come out, because there's too much of it. Like, how can you possibly read and be informed on the short fiction field if you just read it? So I like wait till all the awards come out and then I go back and read it, because there's just too much. It's overwhelming to me to how to pick short fiction.
Totally agree that it is overwhelming. When I put together my ebook for all the stuff I was going to try to read to play catch up on the shorter categories, it was over 1400 pages long. Just from people recommending stuff to me. And I didn't get through all of it. There were a lot of things that I missed that were in there. And that's just from time. I just didn't have time. I think I read like 600 pages of it before my brain exploded and I pooed myself, and that was the end. So,
and there was no KJ Parker story this year, so I was confused about what to vote for. So,
I suspect you'll like the John Chu, and probably the Sophia Samatar. You may like all of them. Who knows? But anyway, any other thoughts on the novella?
No.
Nope. Awesome. All right, best novel. In case people want to know, it's Ancillary Justice by Anne Leckie, Neptune's Brood by Charles Stross, Parasite by Mira Grant, Warbound, Book 3 of the Grim Noir Chronicles by Larry Correa, and The Wheel of Time by Robert Jordan, and I'm going to suspect that Justin will want to say something very specific about that last one. So I'm going to let you talk first, Justin.
Oh, God, I have so... To use a phrase that is most often used by my dear friend, Renee... I have so many feels about The Wheel of Time.
I'm with you, Justin.
And I love The Wheel of Time with a passion that can only be bred in the body of a 13-year-old, shy, introverted kid that fell in love with that story. And so I have so much emotion wrapped up in it that... it's hard for me to get distance a little bit, but I have distance and it sucks. Like, The Wheel of Time as a narrative is not very good. And so I will tell you that I nominated it, and I nominated it because I believe it is a vitally significant piece of work within the genre. Cause it is in a large part one of the things that allowed Tor to do all the things that it does, and it opened the doors to a lot of people being able to write a certain way and to make a living in this business. And so it's really important from that perspective. However, A Memory of Light is not even close to the best novel that was published last year. The Wheel of Time is not even, you know, it's just not. So on the one hand, I'm kind of glad to see it there. You know, it's one of those things that I wish it was the fifth worst thing on the ballot, so it would be something that was there for like a nice pat on the back to it, but really didn't have a chance to win. Because that's how I intended it, as a recognition to, like, this was important, but it really shouldn't win. But unfortunately, to me, it's all of a sudden become number two, because the rest of the options just aren't real good. Beyond stoked to see Ancillary Justice there. It's a wonderful novel. I think it's by far the best choice on this list. Neptune's Brood I've not read. I have a strong feeling, though, about multiple, like, second and third books in a series being nominated for an award like this. I would rather they weren't. So I'm not going to speak too much about Neptune's Brood. Warbound, whatever, we don't need to go into that. We just did it for 30 minutes. But Parasite, unfortunately, like, Mira Grant has now been on the best novel ballot for the fourth straight year. And I don't think it's been anywhere close to one of the best novels of the year in any of those years, except maybe the first, if you really loved Feed. I didn't, but I know a lot of people did. And I think the fact that Mira Grant is now their fourth year on the best novel ballot is another demonstration of some of the flaws in the Hugo that her very dedicated fans are putting her on here year after year after year, when I don't know that novel deserves – or that her novels deserve to be four consecutive years on the best novel ballot, something that even writers like John Scalzi can't claim. I mean, The Human Division is not on this list, and it certainly could be, and his readership is far larger. So I just think that it's something to pay attention to.
Natalie.
I guess with The Wheel of Time, I understand it's a significant work of fantasy, but I really dislike that little bit of wiggle room in the rules that allows an entire series to be nominated in the year in which the last volume comes out. It just feels hinky to me. I don't like it. It doesn't feel right to me. I've only ever read the first Wheel of Time book. I bought an ARC for a quarter at a garage sale in the early 90s, and I should have kept it. I also picked up a signed copy of Heinlein's Friday at that same garage sale. I kept the wrong book, clearly. But I remember reading it and not liking it, so I've never touched anything else Jordan has ever written, because it just didn't work for me even when I was a teenager. The book I'm most excited about on this list is Ancillary Justice. I absolutely adored that book. with every fiber of my being to the point where I made a playlist for it because Breck, the main character, she sings. And I have this thing for sentient tech and I just, a computer, you know, a sentient spaceship that likes to sing is just, I mean, that is like so far up my alley, it's like not even funny. And I'm actually, I think I've got a copy of Neptune's Brood waiting on my shelf for me to read. I actually really loved Saturn's Children. I thought it was hilarious. Heinlein's pastiche. I mean, it was just, it kind of hit all those buttons in a really funny way for me. But I haven't read Parasite. I probably won't. And I'm certainly probably not going to read the Larry Correia book either because I would have too much other reading to get caught up to multiple, you know, to get caught up to volumes. Three, are both of those volume three? I know Warbound obviously is, but is Parasite book, is that the third book or the second book in
it's,
that?
It's the first book in a new series.
In a new series? Okay.
Yeah. So it was Feed, and then it was Blackout, and then it was something else. And,
okay, well.
And now this is a newly unconnected series.
Okay, well maybe I might, I may very well read that one then. I just have very little time for reading these days, so. I'm going to be a bad Hugo voter, probably not read everything.
Okay, I will jump in. I've not read Neptune's Brood, so I have no comment, but I'm looking forward to reading it because I have liked some of Strauss's previous works. I just didn't read that particular one. Parasite, I mean, I'm going to read it, but I haven't really much cared for the Mira Grant stuff, to be honest. Especially last year, I think I was on record as saying I hated the book. I don't think they're that good. And that's my problem. I just don't think they're that good. But that may just be me, and maybe I'm just a weirdo, and I don't know. Warbound, see, like, the thing with, like, Correia is, like, I already said that stuff earlier, and it's like, I'm sure Correia is a perfectly fine author, but I suspect why he doesn't show up on this is just because people don't read in that particular camp. And I'm probably just not going to read that book because of previous reasons. Wheel of Time, I suspect, is going to cause a lot of controversy because it's a series being mentioned. I personally just don't give a shit. Like, I get that, okay, it's here. And I mean, I don't think as a general rule, like, if this became a thing where, like, people were nominating series when it ends, and that was how this stuff happened all the time from now on, I think I'd have a problem with it. But I'm not sure that's necessarily going to happen. And in this case, I mean, I just kind of, like, okay, it's there and whatever. Like, it for me, it doesn't matter that much that one series kind of shows up here. For me, the clear winner is Ancillary Justice. I think it's a flawed book, but I still loved it. I think it does a lot of really, really awesome things. I mean, even the opening chapter is just incredibly destabilizing because you go into it expecting, like, everything's just going to be, like, all of the rules about how reality works are just going to be the way they are. And then she's like, nope, I'm going to fuck with your rules about gender. Have a nice day. And then you just thrust into this just strange new sci-fi world. So I just loved it. I thought it was a really great book. And I think that's going to be the clear winner unless I'm really, really blown away by one of the other books. I'm most likely not going to nominate Wheel of Time because I have not read it. And to be honest, I am not going to read that whole fucking thing. It's not going to happen.
I wonder what's going to be in the packet.
I was thinking the same thing.
Oh, that'd be awesome. All the books.
That would make the Hugo Packard the best ever. I mean,
the best deal ever.
Well, yeah. I mean, I got off the Wheel of Time early on. I liked the first couple, and then I'm like, eh. There's other things to read. There's other authors I want to read, but I do. I'm sorry. Did I just jump over you, Justin? I apologize. Go ahead, Justin.
You jumped over a bunch of people.
No, not at all.
Oh my God.
Go ahead, Paul. Just finish your thought.
So from a historical point of view, I can see why Wheel of Time should be there, and it's probably going to be my number three behind Anne Leckie and Mr. Strauss. Mira Grant, I like some of Sharnan's shorter work. I'm not so thrilled with her longer work. And Larry Correia, I actually have a copy of the first novel in that series, but I haven't read it, and I haven't really been motivated to do so.
Fair enough. Justin's next, I think. Oh, no, Jen. Jen's next. Jen,
that's okay. So I've read 12 of the 20 Wheel of Time. I know there's not 20. I hated every single one of them.
You read them all.
Which makes them particularly torturous in my mind. I'm disappointed that a loophole is allowing this, even though the later work, the ones that Brandon has written, by all accounts, are 100 million times better than anything written by Robert Jordan. May he rest in peace. But it's just like, come on, seriously? I guarantee that there's a lot out there that's way better than any single volume of Wheel of Time, and probably better than the entire series on together. So why? I'm kind of sad that Ancillary Justice, which by all accounts, again, is an amazing book, may very well win by default, because I think people are getting sick of Mira Grant. I'm not necessarily saying that's a good thing or a bad thing, just that they might be getting sick of her. Strauss, he's good, but who knows? Does he have the fan base? And then let's just not talk about Warbound anymore.
Okay. Oh, we're going to get so much flack for this episode. Probably. It'll be our new most downloaded episode, like last year's Hugo episode.
I will just point out that the Wheel of Time, I understand that it's using a loophole, perhaps, to be nominated here, but it is also a very unique situation. There are very few series of this level of popularity that have never had one of their component parts nominated. I mean, certainly A Song of Ice and Fire, you know, Storm of Swords was nominated. You see a lot of the other long running series that, you know, the first book or one of the books got nominated at some point along the line. The fact that Wheel of Time just was never nominated is frankly kind of a fluke, I guess. And so now, I mean, I think it's just a unique situation, frankly. You know, I think when, you know, the Malazan Book of the Fallen, this could have happened with when The Crippled God came out 2 years ago to finish that series. It could, I guess, theoretically happen with Brandon Sanderson's Stormlight Archive someday. But we'll have to wait and see. I think in the meantime, it would probably be hasty to say that we need to change the rules so this can't happen anymore. But anyway. I love the manipulation of rules. So I actually get a lot of fun out of this. Like, I think one of the funnest parts of these sorts of processes is finding loopholes. So, like, I actually get a little bit of glee out of this. And I don't know. That's just my own, like, reaction to rule bending. I kind of get a kick out of it every once in a while.
Well, that's good. All right. I see Natalie has a hand. So why don't you jump in?
I just wanted to say, you know, the manipulating of rules and stuff. Like, you know the game Munchkin?
Yes.
which is like the game for rules lawyers.
Yeah. I'm not surprised Justin loves this.
I fucking loathe that game with a passion of 1,000 burning suns because I hate rules lawyering so much. And at my day job, I work with engineers and all they do is rules lawyer me. So, because I tell them they can't spend the money and they try to tell me that they can. Or they try to tell me that they shouldn't pay a charge. I'm like, yes, you do. And it's my life is rules lawyering, so I would like to keep it out of my fandom.
I will just say that nothing can make that game more frustrating than playing it with a bunch of English majors.
I was an English major.
Okay, well, because I play it with my friends who are all in the PhD program in English. We're all in the same program, so like we sit there, and then if we disagree on a rule, it becomes an argument about which interpretation is the most accurate. And there are just these long debates, and it just becomes increasingly frustrating. And then, like, afterwards, it's like this weird passive-aggressive experience where, like, if I give in because I just don't want to argue anymore, it's like, oh, Sean is so mad. He's so mad. And, like, that's what actually pisses me off is not the argument. It's, like, getting poked after I've just, like, tried to move on with life. And, yeah, it's just – that game destroys friendships.
See, and this does. Is why I play Cards Against Humanity instead.
Much better, because at least everyone feels like a horrible human being at the end of that.
Exactly.
It's a great game. If I can bring it, Paul, we will play it at Convergence.
Sure.
And yep. Yeah.
We have the bigger, blacker box at my house.
Oh, fun. Fun.
I will say that it is nice when flaws are exposed and can hopefully therefore be fixed.
And look, I think that is the takeaway from this year's Here You Go ballot, right? There have been lots of flaws exposed in the system. I think we have been saying for years, I know I certainly have been saying for years, that, hey, we need to take a look at the way this award is administered, because it's not doing a very good job of creating, you know, sort of a representational picture of the genre. And so maybe this will be the proverbial straw that breaks the camel's back, and we have an opportunity to actually get into these rules and improve what I think we all believe is the seminal award in the genre. And I know we would, even those of us that are very critical of it, of which I have been one, that at the end of the day, we just want it to be better. And hopefully this is an opportunity to do that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think some people mistake criticism of the award with, like, why do you care so much? Why don't you just ignore it? And it's like, well, no, we don't ignore it, because a lot of us who actually criticize this award actually care about the award. It has value to us in this community. It does for me. I mean, it is a celebration. It is a celebration of work, but it is also a celebration of work within a specific context. And, you know, and in this context, it's, you know, a specific segment of the voters, of regular everyday people selecting the stuff that they love. And in a lot of respects, it gets it right. It does it really well, and we get to see really great works getting recognition. And the awards overall, I think, are positive. I think they're good. But that doesn't mean that we should be complacent. Because, I mean, it's not a juried award that has, like, a list of criteria that have to be met. It's a fluid award, and we should be constantly, you know, looking at it, criticizing it, sort of picking at it to sort of figure out how do we improve this over time. I mean, I guess kind of like what Kevin Stanley said last year, you know, this isn't technically it's not a democracy the way this award works. However, it should be changing like democracies do, which is incremental improvements over time. And that only happens if people care enough to actually talk about the things they don't like. Or at least I think so. But maybe I'm a total weirdo. So. Yeah, this is true. Well, any case, I think we've hit it. So I guess the consensus is lots of squee and a little bit of aww. And just generally kind of a little mixed bag. But that's sort of like every year, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
On behalf of Natalie and myself, I would like to congratulate the Skiffy and Fanny Show on their Hugo nomination.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, I was just going to ask if it would be really in poor taste if I say, and now go vote for us.
Yeah, it kind of would. A little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you should just vote in general, whether you vote for us
really
or not. I mean, I wrote that in our little We Got Nominated thing. Like, don't just vote for us just because we asked you to vote for us. You know, there are other names on the list. If you vote the one you like.
Vote for what you love.
And I think people who are not currently registered who want to vote, pay your whatever $50 or however much it is, get your voter packet and vote.
I would wait and find out if the entire Wheel of Time is in the voter packet, then make your decision.
Well, it's already it's get more than $50 for the material.
That is very mercenary.
But okay, you could wait, I guess. Anyway, all right. Well, thank you, Natalie, for showing up and participating.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
Do you want to tell people where they can find you on the interwebs?
Sure. I can be found at The Radish at radishreviews.com. I'm also on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Islatan, which is Natalie spelled backwards. So,
Are you shitting me?
No! No! It's Natalie spelled backwards. So,
do you know how many times I've tried to type your email address and mistyped it because I have no idea what that word is?
You and John Scalzi both.
Mind blown.
Oh my god, that's the greatest thing ever. Excellent. Well, you should go check out Radish Reviews. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I'm hoping to post more frequently than just my weekly link posts. I do have a couple books. I have actually read a book this month, so it's very exciting.
Excellent. And Justin,
but before I talk about myself real quick, I just want to mention that Natalie also works as an editor for Mask Books. And a little plug just for people that are looking to next year. I meant to talk about this during the novella category, but there's a book called Trading Rosemary that's out there right now. It's a novella published by Mask Books, and it's incredible, by Octavia Cade. Is that right?
Yes, and she's from New Zealand, and I think it's right on the line of novella. It's, I think, 30,000 words.
I don't just go read it.
It's yeah, I read it. She's got voice like you wouldn't believe. And we've got another one coming from her at the end of this year called The Don't Girls, which is completely different.
Anyway, it's staggeringly good. People should go read it, and I'll just say that. And so now who I am, because let's talk about me some more. Mm-hmm. I'm Justin Landon. You can find me at my blog, stabbersbookreview.com. And I am also the host of the tour.com podcast, Rocket Talk. And I tweet prolifically at J. Diddy Esquire.
J. Diddy Esquire. Yep. All right. Well, great. I don't think anybody needs to know anything about the rest of us because we're not new people.
We're not special.
No, especially
we're special, but we're not new.
Excellent. Well, so thank you guys for coming on and talking about all of this. You know, hopefully it's food for thought for some people, and I'm sure it'll piss off someone. But you know, we do that.
I'm already getting some amazing comments on my blog.
That's great.
I unfortunately have stepped in.
Thank you.
Have you stopped recording, Sean?
No, I have not. So on that note, awkward ending and scene. If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@SkiffyandFanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.com.
Go to Google+.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
You're just another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction!
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.
Hey everybody, welcome to the World SF Tour, our special feature throughout the year in which we're obviously celebrating World SF. There are a number of ways you could support this show, just really quick. One is you could subscribe to the show. We're on iTunes, have the blog, all that good stuff. There's all kinds of cool stuff on the blog too you should check out. That's one way you could support us. You can obviously let people know about us. That's really cool when people do that, link to us and all that good stuff. And the other way is actually to go to audibletrial.com/skiffyandfanty, sign up for 1 month free trial membership. You get a free audiobook out of the deal. You get to try their service if you like it, to keep it, which is cool. And yeah, I mean, that's really that simple. So that helps us as much as the rest of it does. But in any case, thank you for listening. I really hope you enjoy this year, this very specially themed year. And of course, if we missed anything, which we're undoubtedly going to do, feel free to let us know. Send us an email or leave a comment or something. Maybe even on some of our discussion episodes, you let us know about some great works from a certain region that we should be talking about. So in any case, I'll let you get to the episode, and I hope you enjoy it.